At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm Kim McAllister. We are joining the Drex Show now on KGOA 10.
They chose to do this show for all the best reasons.
Representing an industry that places crushing standards on all of us.
Don't be so sure about that.
I'm bored.
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10.
Susan from San Francisco. Bob from Houston. Kelly from Wichita. Lou.
These are the names of the victims, not of robbery, not of assault. These are the victims of Pokemon Go. They've walked into oncoming traffic, been arrested for trespassing, fallen down flights of stairs, and racked up medical and legal bills trying to catch a zippity zapper or a wobbly woo or whatever the hell they're called. And now they need your help. Kanye. From Los Angeles, announcing Pokemon Go Fund Me, an online fundraising effort to help ease the financial burden of the millions of people addicted to this mobile game who lack the simple common sense so many of us enjoy today. Is it their fault the game is so engrossing that they've injured themselves or others or damaged property? No. So won't you help? Put down the mobile phone and go online now and help others fight their addiction. Just as soon as you capture that last flaming Pretzorb, Pokemon GoFundMe. Not for you, but for those who've been kicked in the Pokemon balls.
I think we all have, and we've had enough of being kicked in the Pokemon balls. Except Hillary went there. She did.
I don't know who created Pokemon Go. But I'm trying to figure out how we get them to have Pokemon go to the polls.
Oh, she did not just Pokemon go there.
Go to the polls. Why don't you just stick to picking a vice presidential candidate that will put you in office?
Do what you do best in your pantsuit.
Wow. You know, that sounded a little bit in my head. That was a combination of Hillary and Bernie together. Why don't you...
I don't know. You need a little more Jewish uncle in there.
Yeah.
I heard the Hillary cadence.
And stop it with that cadence. Okay.
I am yelling.
I know, right? All right. Well, Chip was right. Yeah. If I'm going down, it's like a 747. So bring it on.
Andy, I still love you.
Do you
remember?
That's right. And the baby will be crying because the baby doesn't have a father because you're a selfish bastard. Mick Jagger is expecting his eighth child. He'll be 73 next week. I'm all over this. Yes, this 747 is flying straight through this. All right. It's the Rolling Stone legend's first child with his girlfriend, Melanie Hamrick, who's 29. His rep says, confirmed a report by People Magazine and the other media outlets that she's an El Prego. But this is great news. It will be Mick's eighth child. Nothing fazes him. He's been incredibly supportive. She's a very bright, intelligent, sparky person who has her own ideas on how she wants to lead her life. She knows what a great relationship Mick has with all of his children and can't wait to be a dad again. They are all taking the news in stride. His latest child will be Jagger's eighth with five different women.
I think it's lovely because she can change both their diapers now.
I have to tell you something.
It's true love.
Yeah, that's true love. Okay, I want to take calls on this. I think it's selfish as hell. I think it's really, really super mean because, you know, this child that's not even born, when it does pop out of her, when it falls out of her, okay.
When it does that rooster dance
right.
out of her.
If daddy's still around and he's still alive, it'd be like, oh, well, eventually this kid will learn that Mick Jagger is your daddy.
Oh, my God.
Unfortunately, how long will this child have a daddy? And this is what kills me about these people in their 70s. What the hell is wrong with them? I mean, they're not thinking with their penis. Look, I want to tell you, one of the greatest lines that my shrink ever told me was, Drex, I have to tell you, one thing that you'll dig about your 50s is that the tyranny of sex will come to an end. Apparently
I'm sorry,
not.
But in Turkey, they're not overthrowing sex.
Yes, they need to overthrow his penis. So I want to open up the lines here. 808-0810. If you're outside the Bay, the San Francisco area code is 415-808-0810. Do you agree with me, or do you just think it's fine? Because let's do the math. He has eight. This is his eighth with five different women. I don't care about that. He has a son who's 45 from his relationship with Marsha Hunt, a daughter Jade who is now 44 with his ex-wife Bianca. He had four children with his ex-partner Jerry Hall: Elizabeth 32, James 30, Georgia 24, and Gabriel 19. He also has a son Lucas 17 after a brief relationship with that Brazilian model, whatever her name was. And, the liaison ended Sir Mick's 22-year-old relationship with Hall, who is now married to... And then there's her. Yes. Remember Jerry Hall? She married Rupert Murdoch, who's 120.
That's just love.
Yeah.
That's all just love.
My God. And he also has five grandchildren. And he became a great-grandfather in May of 2014 when Jade's daughter, Assisi, gave birth to a baby girl. So he's already a great-grandfather, and he's pumping out more. Now, do you think it's, like, none of anybody's business, or do you just think this is crazy? And here's the other thing that the child doesn't care about. 415-808-0810. You have to have some thought about this. What do you think? I mean, do you think it's cool that 75-year-old people are making babies just because, they're rich and they've got a 29-year-old, arm piece?
Just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should.
Because children want their father. They don't care about his fame or his money because he won't be around. He's not going to see them go to high school. He's not going to walk them down the aisle. He's not the only person who's done this. Ronnie Wood became a father again at 68. So, Mick is 72, going to be 73 next week. You think it's okay. She's 29. I guess she wants a baby.
I am not 29. Oh, I was like, yeah. Okay.
So she's
clearly
29.
No one's mistaking me for 29.
But let's look at the flip side. So you could say, Drex, you're wrong because she's 29 and she's... Are they
I
married?
Hadn't thought about that.
It's his girlfriend.
Yeah, no, okay. They're not married, honey.
They're not married.
He's a rock and roller.
His latest child will be Jagger's eighth with five different women. Yeah. Okay, so they're not married. I don't think that has, who cares, I guess. 808-0810. Do you care?
For the woman. That's what I was going to say. So, yeah, that's 29, 30, 31. The baby-making years, you definitely want to settle down and do that.
Yes, it's time for her too, for sure.
I'm not her, but it's not just looks. It's the pocketbook, right, as a motivation.
Yes. And
am I jaded?
No, because I think, you're Angie. Is who you are. Now, look, I think that if you're 29 and you can have Mick Jagger's baby, why not? If you want to have a baby.
Because I have to do it with Mick Jagger. That's why.
All right, 808-0810. We'll see what people think about that. And then we'll talk about the Danny Mather situation and her saying, oh, God, wait till you hear this. So she says this was a mistake. She accidentally posted that Snapchat person of that middle-aged woman.
Wait till you hear the sound clip I got.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's good stuff. That's on the way on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810. But first, with a look at traffic, here's Lee Grant.
810.
And away we KGO go.
Andy.
Let's make another baby. It still works. It might be 73, but it still spits. Okay, so Mick Jagger expecting his eighth child at the age of 73 with his girlfriend, and this will be his, this is his latest child, will be Jagger's eighth with five different women. And I said it's incredibly selfish. All right, 808-0810 is the number, and we go to, let me see here. Get my mouse to work. Hi, mouse. Pokemon Ho. Go. There we go. Ken in San Francisco.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. So, what do you think about
Mick? Yeah, Jagger's brilliant because this time around he won't have to deal with any teenage rebellion.
That's true. That's true. But do you think at all that it's selfish?
He just left. He's selfish. I mean, he just hung up. You don't imagine that.
Well, there won't be any teenage rebellion.
Could you imagine trying to be teenager rebelling against the biggest rebel of his own generation?
I know.
That's
right.
A tall order. Like, the best way you could rebel is become a nun. Go to a nunnery.
Well, at least you can't say he doesn't get none, because that's not the case. All right, let's move along, because I want to move on to this woman. And by the way, I wouldn't say she's famous because, did you know who she was?
No. No. Danny who?
Playboy model Danny Mathers.
Playboy model.
Right.
Not just bunny anymore, because now we're models, because it's feminism.
Didn't he say that he wasn't, you's not putting nudes out anymore, I don't think.
No, they're not. They're going
discreetly
upscale.
Okay, so check this out. So Danny Mathers, the 2015 Playmate of the Year, has come under fire after the 29-year-old model posted a photo of a naked woman in her gym locker at LA Fitness in Los Angeles, I suppose, capturing the snap. If I can't unsee this, then you can't either. She followed it up with a selfie of herself covering her mouth in mock shock. Take a listen to this.
I just wanted to acknowledge a photo that I accidentally posted here on Snapchat earlier today and let you guys know that that was absolutely wrong and not what I meant to do.
While apologizing, Mathers also tried to explain why she took the pic.
I have chosen to do what I do for a living because I love the female body, and I know that body shaming is wrong, and that's not what I'm about. That's not the type of person that I am. That photo was taken to be part of a personal conversation with a girlfriend. I know that I've upset a lot of people out there, but please, please believe me when I say this is not the type of person I am. I've never done this before. I will never do this again. You have my word.
That's BS, and I don't buy it. I mean, she took the time to Snapchat it. She filtered it, and like I said, and if you know anything of it, look, you don't even have to know anything about Snapchat. So she captioned it, too, all right? And she put up there, she had to sit there and work this thing for 10 minutes. If I can't unsee this, then you can't either. And it was a middle-aged, I don't know, she's in her 30s or something, a little average
she's
body.
29, air quotes, bunny ears.
No. Oh, her.
Yeah.
Danny Mathers. But the picture of the naked woman in the shower, I just think that.
Oh, that's totally rude. You're not allowed to have cameras in the shower at locker rooms for that reason.
But here, I'm not buying that she accidentally posted it.
Of course not.
You didn't accidentally post it. And then she put up another one, like I said, her covering her mouth in mock shock.
No.
808-0810. What do you think about that? Man, we got two rolling here. Mick Jagger.
And
Danny Mathers. Body shaming a naked woman at the gym. I mean, do you go to the gym? Do you trust taking a shower there? People do this. You know, this is why people hate going to the gym. I mean, besides,
can I
they just don't want to exercise.
The two topics, can I just body shame Mick Jagger, even with his clothes on? Because I know I'm not politically correct, but I kind of want to.
Okay, 808-0810. Let's go to Royal in San Francisco, wants to talk about Mick Jagger. Royal, go ahead. You're on.
Hey, first of all, huge fan of your show.
Thank you.
Love it. So, Mick Jagger, my first reaction was kind of like yours, you know, he's going to be dead soon. But the more I thought of it, if you think of family life as a spectrum, and at the bad end of the spectrum, you have abusive people, people who are maybe really stupid and they're, you know, going to be bad parents. Maybe they don't have any money, so the kids are going to have to endure grinding poverty. So that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum, you've got smart people, loving people, lots of money to be able to spend on lots of wonderful things. I would think the fact that he's so old maybe doesn't necessarily pull him toward the bad end of the spectrum. I mean, if we give him the benefit of the doubt and say he's one of the most, you know, creative people on the planet, and he's got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars coming out of his ears, hopefully they would spend well on the kid. All right, so he's 73. Maybe he'll live to be 90, you know?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I see. Yeah, you know, and look, I mean, if Keith Richards is still around, there's hope for all of us. You know what I'm saying? But I just think, if you negate the money and the fame and all the wonderful things that you're talking about, don't you think the kid wants a daddy?
Yeah, it's going to be sad because actuarial tables, you know, tell us that although he's reached 73, which means he's probably not going to die real soon, you know, his odds of getting 290 or much past 90 are not good. And so basically, yeah, you're talking about the kid losing the dad in his teen years.
That's let's talk about the actuary tables. Ken, for him, it's absolutely 76. Well, it is.
Tested some illegal substances.
Right. And I would say that based on his rock and roll lifestyle, it was probably about 63 or 65. But he's been fortunate. He's been blessed. So we'll see.
Yeah, I just think it kind of depends on how good a mom she is. And she's a wild card. I don't think we know much about her. But if she's a great mom, you know, maybe it's not such a horrendous thing, things considered.
I'm going to roll with you. Yeah, I'm going to, Rolling Stone with you. Okay, thank you very much, Ken. I appreciate the call. Yeah, well, you could put it. I can see the perspective that he's putting it in because I'm framing it a little bit different, too. Okay, so let's say he drops dead in 3 years, all right? Well, now, this is opposite of Russell Wilson and Sierra yesterday when we were talking about the other, you know, baby daddy. If she gets married again and the kid's five, you know, if he's not around, that person will be daddy. And hopefully it will be a loving person. All right, here we go. Lots of calls. Let's go to Anthony in El Cerrito. Mick Jagger. Hi, is this Anthony? No, wait a second. No. I got my lines mixed up. I'm on. David in Santa Clara. David?
Hey, Drex. It's about the mother's perspective. If Mick Jagger, you know, deposited sperm in a test tube and she was walking through looking at all the, you know, different test tubes, she said, oh, there's Mick Jagger's sperm.
Right.
Whoa. Yeah. Hey, that's what I want. I mean, is that... Maybe he's, he donated to the cause. She's happy. She's like, oh, I got Mick Jagger's sperm. Perfect.
Right. And you know what? Yes. Well, you guys might change my mind on this. You keep working on it because they're not married. So she doesn't necessarily have to walk down the aisle with a dude.
No. And he's old. He's gonna pass away. And she's got offspring that's like...
Right.
Related to Mick Jagger, it's like, wow.
Yeah, you got child support.
That's a great thing, right?
Child support and spousal support for life. Thank you very much. Anthony in El Cerrito, you'd love it too.
Yeah, I was wondering about, Mick Jagger. Like, I don't think it matters how many kids he has. Like, there's like in some countries, they have people got like, you know, men got like 10, 12 kids, 15 kids with different women.
Well, there is that. And basically he's done that. Anthony, I have to tell you, thanks for the call. What did I say? What was this? This is eighth with five different children.
Oh,
but I just think it's really it's kind of strange when he has great grandchildren. And you have to wonder what his older children think, like his son who's 45. Chris Hunt Jagger.
Yeah, the family reunions would be a little odd.
Jay Jagger, who's now 44, from his ex-wife Bianca. And I'd love to get Jerry Hall's spin. Is Jerry Hall, Jerry Hall would be in her 50s, right? So it's too late for her to have Rupert Murdoch's baby, right? She wouldn't want to anyway, I don't think. That relationship's so wacky and weird. But the whole world's wacky and weird, and that's what we love about it. And that's why we do the Drex Radio Show right here on KGO. All right, let's take a look at traffic. We're going to play with Tim Sika coming up here next on KGO. Let's check things out. Here we go. I think the demonstrations are going down. Let's find out. Lee Graham, what's happening?
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Hey, a quick message to Ghostbusters fans upset by the all-female cast. Fellas, I know you're angry a bunch of gals portray iconic characters from your childhood, but your anger's misplaced. Don't be mad they're women. Be mad you're a middle-aged man still affected by Ghostbusters. Or that you still live in your parents' basement, eat Smurfberry Crunch, and wear a Harry Potter onesie. Besides, women aren't scary. They're beautiful creatures with unique things to say. Get out. Say hi to one. Offer to buy her a drink or a Twizzler. Whatever you can afford on your allowance. Take the plunge, nerdy gents. She won't bite. That's extra. Once you get to know one, I think you'll agree. They're not that bad. Go ahead. Give it a try. Oh, and one more thing. Quit walking in front of my car while playing Pokemon Go, you loser. I ain't afraid of no girls.
And away we KGO go. I know, right on. On the Drex Radio Show, and it's Tim Sika time, which is always great because that means it's the weekend, and he is the president of the San Francisco Film Critics Circle. And, well, we've been waiting and waiting, and here it is. Ghostbusters sits on our lap. Let me play the trailer. I have a couple of them, but I'll play one of them. Let's do
it. So, proton glove, it's going to maximize flexibility during hand-to-specter combat. Just give it a punch. It's motion-activated.
And here we go with the female version of the characters from the first one. So yeah, how are we doing?
I like that takedown of that you played of all, you know, the takedown of all those prone to be testy male fans who hold the original
yes.
in such high esteem. That was really funny. Happy to report that this reimagining of the franchise holds its own. It passes muster in just about all departments. It stars a cast of four fantastically funny ladies. It's probably going to do really well at the box office. Melissa McCarthy is in this, Kristen Wiig, SNL's Leslie Jones, and SNL's Kate McKinnon, who does a very mean Hillary Clinton impersonation on that show, by the way. They play four parapsychologists who start a ghost-catching business in New York City. The plot is really silly. It's mostly an excuse to showcase these amazing comedians and also the state-of-the-art CGI, which this Ghostbusters really boasts in spades. My only criticism at nearly 2 hours, it's kind of pushing it, you know, because that's long for a comedy. The second half, when the movie starts to rely on all these spectacular ghost set pieces, it gets a little tiring. And whenever the emphasis is placed on anything other than these four women talking, interacting, or bantering back and forth, the laughs tend to diminish. But it's hard to find fault with this new Ghostbusters. It delivers. By comparison, the original, starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Harold Ramis as three males parapsychologists who start a ghost-catching business in New York City, is kind of quaint, loosey-goosey, and kind of sweet. But this new one, because it had to be, is more reflective of 21st century movie making. And looked at in that context, it's a good night out at the movies. It's scarier than the first one, too. There are a few moments when you might find yourself like wanting to jump out of your seat. But should you see it? Yeah. I think, will you find it funny? I think so. Will it or can it coexist along the original 1984 classic? Yeah, if fans just let it be its own thing.
I'm happy to hear this, yes.
Yeah, one quick thing, too, Drex. I want to alert everybody listening who plans to see this, that to stay through the entire end credit sequence, because there is a surprise at the end. And they make that kind of fun for the audience because they do these interesting things with the end credits that kind of make you want to watch it. But there's a very cool surprise at the end. So, you know, for those people who tend to run out when the end credits come on, they're going to be missing something. Yeah, if they leave too early. Yeah.
Don't do it. So this is very interesting. I was watching Jay Leno's Garage on CNBC, and he went out with Dan Aykroyd, and they went in the updated version of the Ghostbusters mobile. And he did this interview while they were driving around. And I didn't know that Aykroyd, Leno asked him about this this new version, the all-female cast. And he had everything to do with it. He goes, oh, yeah, this is what we wanted to do. We wanted to reboot it, and we wanted to reboot it with a female cast. I didn't know Aykroyd had anything to do with the film.
You know what? I didn't either until I saw this one and did a little bit of research. But apparently he owns a piece of it.
He
executive produced this. Yeah. And he's in this, you know, Bill Murray and Ernie Hudson and even Sigourney Weaver from the original, they all make cameos in this new one. I wish they were better written cameos because they all seem to sort of stop the show and stick out. But yeah, Aykroyd, I believe, was one of the original writers of the piece. So, and he owns a chunk of it. So,
well, no wonder he was so happy to go out and drive Jay around. There's something
money,
behind
it. It's money in his pocket.
Money in his pocket. Here's the official song, Fall Out Boy, featuring Missy Elliott.
I'm not afraid.
right, so you got to love that. That's good stuff. And one of the big hits of the summer.
Play the original one, too, so it's that earworm that you I'm still thinking of that song, you know, like 3 days after the movie.
There you go.
There you go.
And the sad thing is, not very many people called Ray Parker Jr. after that.
What was that all about, do you think? I don't know.
You didn't get any calls after that. I don't know.
No.
Yeah, too much ghost busting, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Well, moving along, we're going to talk about, and I'm excited to talk about this because Bryan Cranston is in this film, The Infiltrator. And interestingly enough, with Bryan Cranston, he was on, let me see if I can find this here quick. He was on one of the talk shows, and he was talking about, I might have to dig somewhere else for this in a second. Oh, here we go. So he was talking about Jerry Seinfeld and how they would, remember he was the dentist. He made a few appearances as a dentist on Seinfeld. And here he is talking about that. Yeah.
Okay. The construct of the show was brilliant. Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld are geniuses. And coming on to that show was like going to comedy camp. I was invited to participate in their comedy. And it was so much fun. The time we had to stop rolling the tape often because Jerry would be laughing. He was the one who cannot keep a straight face. When you watch the show now, you'll see him smiling constantly. That's the best take they had of him not actually laughing, just smiling and trying to contain himself.
I think that's why we all love Seinfeld so much. So The Infiltrator is in the theaters this weekend, and Bryan Cranston is a custom agent who goes undercover to take on Pablo Escobar. Here's the trailer.
Pablo Escobar and his main distributor, Roberto Alcano.
Are you kidding me?
Responsible for 80% of the product flooding into the country.
I know these people. You gotta play with them. You gotta drink with them. You gotta do whatever you gotta do, man.
My friends, welcome to the United States.
In my business, nothing good ever comes in the absence of trust. Without it, there is no loyalty. When there is no loyalty, it never ends well.
So I'm a big Cranston fan. So where do you stand on this one?
Well, I think you'll enjoy the film if you're a Cranston fan, and I don't know anybody who isn't. This movie, The Infiltrator, it's actually based on the autobiographical book of the same name, so it's a true story. And yeah, it's a solid workmanlike crime docudrama. It's directed by Brad Furman of The Lincoln Lawyer. And all the requisite elements of this kind of crime drug saga are solidly in place in this film. The story reasonably holds your interest. Cranston is always great. He's good here in that he hits all the beats of the character. The glitch, though, for me, is that he seems a little too old for the part. At 60, he kind of comes across at times as physically unconvincing as an undercover customs agent, which is not to say he doesn't respectably acquit himself. It's just that he's a bit miscast. His presence, though, lends the film a kind of actorish patina, which both undermines the film, but at the same time serves it, because he's such a presence. He's such a great actor. The film also seems to really want to be considered in the same class with these other undercover crime dramas like Donnie Brasco or The Departed. But in so doing, it only calls attention to the fact that it ain't quite those movies. And yet, I sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, there's something old-fashioned and kind of rattlingly engaging about the story and the characters. So I'm recommending The Infiltrator, especially to fans of undercover crime dramas. And you know who you are. I just wish it was a little less obviously contrived, predictable, and a tad more exciting. But anything that Cranston is in, I think, is to some extent worthwhile and worth checking out, because he is such a consummate performer.
I think the way people are intrigued with El Chapo, they have always been intrigued by Pablo Escobar. So I think there's an element of that going on, too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a break when we come back. We have a couple more movies to talk about, Captain Fantastic and Our Little Sister. And I always have a surprise for Tim. Quentin Tarantino says he doesn't steal from other movies as much as film critics like you think. That's going to be a lot of fun. All right. Stand by, everybody. More of the Drex Radio Show on the way. But first, with a look at traffic, here's Lee Graham.
KGO 810 traffic. Now back to the Drex Radio Show. On KGO 810.
Almost time.
Didn't you, dear? You nearly had me roped and tied. All about
yes.
Hypnotized with freedom, whispered in my ear.
You're a butterfly. That's right.
And butterflies are free to fly. Fly away. Fly away.
Bye-bye. Yes, so we're here to talk about Captain Fantastic, which might not have anything to do with Elton John, but I just love Captain Fantastic, the entire album, and the Brown Bird Cowboy.
Yeah, but you guys sound like you're really chilling in studio. I wish I was there and not here.
Well, someday you're going to have to join us.
I'm telling you, we can have a Tim Sika special.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It very soon we're going to do that. Right, yes, right. Very soon, yes.
We're going to make a whole Friday night of it. Okay.
Yeah, right.
So what is – I have no idea what Captain Fantastic is about.
You know, this is another film like The Infiltrator that I had a little bit of problems with, but which also has enough good in it to recommend. It's called Captain Fantastic. It's written and directed by Matt Ross, who's an actor. He's one of those guys that you may not recognize the name, but if you saw him, you'd go, oh, that guy. He's currently in Silicon Valley, the series – which I'm unfamiliar with, but he's in that. He was in Big Love. He was in American Horror Story. Anyway, it's the story of this idealistic, back-to-basics father who lives and raises his family of six children off the grid in the forests of the Pacific Northwest. And Viggo Mortensen, who is famous for playing Aragorn in the Lord of the Rings movies, he plays the father. And we quickly learn that he's raising his six kids alone because his wife is suffering from a bipolar disorder, and she's being hospitalized in the city. So when this tragedy strikes the family, they're forced to leave this paradise that the father's created for the family and begin a journey back into the outside world that sort of challenges the dad's idea of what it means to be a parent and brings into question everything he's taught his kids. You know, he teaches his kids to kill animals for food. They fend for themselves. They have no cell phones, no technology. He rigorously schools the kids intellectually. He has them read books like Lolita, you know, the Nabokov Lolita, the writings of Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn's A People History of the United States. He himself wears a Jesse Jackson 1988 T-shirt. So, yeah. Anyway, this movie is about a lot of things, but for me, it's kind of boiled down to two. It's a parable about what's lacking in the culture, you know, things like critical discourse, basic knowledge of the world around us, critical thinking, reading, thinking in general. It's about that. But it's kind of this allegory of love, too, and what that means and what it means to be a good parent and how letting go sometimes is such an important component of love. It's also an allegory about our technologies kind of exceeding our philosophies and our morals and how you balance the two. And, yeah, my reservations about the film are quibbles. It seems to go soft in the end without revealing the end. It kind of wants to have it always instead of taking a stand on the issues it raises. It kind of lacks the bite and the originality of this other film that you guys might have seen. It's a similar topic and themes. It's the 1986 Peter Weir film, The Mosquito Coast, with Harrison Ford.
Right.
It's the same type of movie. But that said, I think folks should check this out. It raises a lot of important issues and concerns that are really relevant to what a lot of us are living through right now in politics and religion that warrant discussion and conversation and analysis. It's a good movie to take the family to and talk about afterwards. And interestingly, Drex, the Captain Fantastic won a Best Director Prize at the Cannes Film Festival this year. So France obviously, you know, found a lot in it to recommend.
Wow. Okay. Captain Fantastic. Go. How about Our Little Sister? Don't know anything about that one either.
Well, this is for the art house cinema lovers listening tonight. And I highly recommend Our Little Sister. It's a Japanese film directed by Hirokazu Koreeda, a filmmaker I like very much. He made, among other films, a wonderful little movie in 2004 called Nobody Knows. But his latest, Our Little Sister, tells the story of three sisters in their 20s who live together in Kamakura. I think that's a city in Kanagawa Prefecture, Japan. Anyway, and who are one day joined by their 14-year-old half-sister after the death of their father. And this is my choice for the best film of the week. It's a quiet character study, starring and dominated by women, which in itself is refreshing. It very lovingly explores family dynamics, and although it's cultural specific, the story is universally relatable. It's in Japanese. It's got English subtitles, but it needs a lot of love. And I wanted to, you know, to give a shout out for folks to check it out. It's a little film. It's a quiet little gem, but it needs a lot of love and it needs support. And it opens today in San Francisco and San Rafael and in San Jose. So I hope people will, you know, give it a chance. It's a really good movie. It's probably, if I had to pick one film for the week to see, I would say it has to go to Our Little Sister.
Okay. And the big one, Ghostbusters. Okay, so we promised to talk about Quentin Tarantino. Yeah. Says he doesn't steal that much from other movies as much as you think. So I want to tell you what he says, because he points right at you guys, you as a film critic.
Yeah.
In Pulp Fiction, when Marcellus walks in front of the car, and which is similar to the one in Psycho, he says, I think that might be the only shot for shot I've ever taken from another movie exactly, but I get accused of this all the time. It's very much in the mind of critics who are trying to beat the mastermind and show how smart they are with all their film references. Yes,
and that hurts.
Yeah. So
you know,
what do you think?
It's funny because I've said that before, but I've said it in a way that I meant was a compliment to him, because I guess the more accurate way of saying it is that
he's very sensitive.
He is, but yeah. You know what? What he does is it's obvious, at least maybe obvious to me as a film person, the influences that he's been most affected by. And what he does is he does borrow a lot, but he makes the films his own. They're very original. They're very smart. They're very visceral. They're very entertaining. So I don't know. I mean, if Quentin's listening to this, I've said that before, but I've always meant it as a compliment, because I think he's a great filmmaker. I think he's a brilliant guy. I think I always look forward to his movies. I wish to heck he would make more. We have to wait so long between movies. You know,
yeah, well,
but George Lucas did that with Star Wars. I mean, he borrowed from every, you know, Saturday morning serial but that movie is original. There is no movie like Star Wars, and Quentin Tarantino's movies are very, very unique in and of themselves, even though they borrow from other movies. It's okay. You know, they say that if you're going to steal from somebody, steal from the best, right?
So. Right. Well, he also said he plans on stopping at 10 movies, and he counts Kill Bill movies as one, so that mean that would mean he has two more to go.
Two more to go. Well, to yeah. Go. Well, I can't wait. I'm waiting with bated breath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mean, you think of some of the great Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs. My God.
Inglorious Bastards. Inglorious Bastards. Yeah. Oh my God, that was fabulous. Yeah.
Amazing.
That was my number one movie for that year. Yeah.
All right.
I love that.
Well, thank you, Tim Sika. You're wonderful as always. So.
Oh, thanks, Drex.
You have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye to you, and goodbye to Valerie.
Okay. Very good. Cool.
Sleeping, I'm home alone. Nighttime, I lights on. Woo, got me scared. Woo, kind of need my bed. In my closet, down the hall. I see shadows
we
all
like
over
Ghostbusters. So Ghostbusters, The Infiltrator, if you like Cranston, Captain Fantastic, and he loved Our Little Sister. All right, more of the Drex Radio Show on the way on KGOA 10.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.